I'm Matt Bush with BPR News. I'm speaking with Dr. Chris Cooper of Western Carolina University. Chris, as always, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely, Matt. Good to talk to you.
So we'll start with fundraising numbers. We're getting some new totals in here right now, particularly with the U.S. Senate race in North Carolina between Democrat Cal Cunningham and Republican incumbent Tom Tillis. What do these fundraising numbers that you've seen tell us about how the race might go, and how important are fundraising numbers, too, in how people end up voting?
Yeah, so for the U.S. Senate, we're looking at big numbers really from both candidates, from the Democrat and the Republican, which of course makes sense. This is going to be one of the core four Senate races that could determine the who ultimately controls the U.S. Senate. With that said, Cal Cunningham outraised Tom Tillis by some pretty extraordinary amounts. So even though Tillis raised big numbers in the millions, multiple millions, Cunningham raised a good bit more. Kind of across the board, it looks like the trend this time has been for Democrats to outraise Republicans. Of course, that's not true in every race. That's not true in every, certainly in every General Assembly race. But in general, the Democrats have done a little bit better job than the Republicans have in North Carolina of fundraising. As far as to what degree it matters, I mean, it is important, of course, but it tails off in importance as you kind of get more money. So there's an amount of money you need to be competitive, but it is not the case that the candidate with the most money always wins. Kind of a good example to our South is Jamie Harrison, who is the Democrat running for the United States Senate in South Carolina against the Republican Lindsey Graham, has actually raised a good bit more even than Cal Cunningham has in North Carolina. But of course, we expect Cunningham to have a much more competitive race than Harrison, who is certainly more likely to lose.
But can you tell us about the gubernatorial race? Obviously, that's another one that's going to have some national significance with the fundraising there between the incumbent Democrat Roy Cooper and his Republican challenger, Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest.
Yeah, so this is another one that is expected to be a close race and an important race. Of course, Governor Cooper won by one of the smallest margins in the entire country the last time he ran. So again, we're looking at pretty big numbers here, and we're looking at a Democratic advantage. So right now, it looks like Roy Cooper is outraising Dan Forrest, his opponent, but Forrest certainly is raising enough money to be competitive, and we would expect this to be a competitive race, although one that probably leans a little bit more towards Cooper at the moment.
Does anything stand out from where the money is coming from, whom is donating?
You know, I mean, there's certainly some interesting patterns as far as where it's coming from. We're seeing a lot of out-of-state money, of course. We're seeing a lot of these small donations that are funneled through each party's kind of super PACs. We're also seeing some individual donors that are driving a lot of this fundraising. So the New Yorker just had a big story about one particular donor, a guy named Ronald Cameron, who runs a poultry company in Little Rock, Arkansas. And he's been involved in North Carolina politics for years, and certainly some reporters around Raleigh have been covering that. But it looks like even in this race, he's still very active. So here's a guy in Little Rock, Arkansas, who is donating money to General Assembly races, including some in North Carolina. He's given money in the 119th State House District here in North Carolina to Mike Clamp, the Republican candidate.
How about polls? We've seen polls for president in North Carolina, Senate, and governor. We've seen several different polls come out maybe in the last month or so. What are those polls telling us right now?
You know, I think at the gubernatorial level, those polls are telling us that that Roy Cooper is slightly favored. He tends to be polling pretty consistently better than Dan Forrest. And one thing I've been watching a lot, he, meaning Cooper, tends to be pulling a few of these Trump voters. So somewhere between 8% and 12% of Trump voters also say they're going to vote for Roy Cooper. So it looks like he may be getting some of that Republican crossover vote, which certainly could help him. At the U.S. Senate level, it's looking incredibly tight, right? So you'll see one poll that will have Cunningham with a little bit of an advantage, and then one came out just yesterday that had Tillis with an advantage. So that's one I would expect to be to come down to the wire. And then for the presidency, again, incredibly tight. I think North Carolina will be a swing state, will be a state that we may not even know when we go to bed on election night who wins. Biden has been polling a little bit better as of late in North Carolina, but it's certainly far too early to make any conclusions.
Back to the gubernatorial race, and it's something you've brought up in many of the conversations we've had about it, is the current incumbent Roy Cooper's ability to win some Trump voters. It is why he won 4 years ago, one of the reasons he won 4 years ago, and one of the reasons there's at least polls showing him winning right now. There were several counties throughout the state in the 2016 election that went for President Trump but also went for Governor Cooper, so this sort of split voting, which you say is so rare. One of them is Jackson County, where you are and where Western Carolina University is. Tell us the significance about that and what you can about Jackson County and why it would be one of these counties where that vote split would occur.
Yeah, Jackson County is a really interesting county. We talk a lot about swing states. I think Jackson is a swing county. So a few different ways that I think that matters. One, Jackson County has more unaffiliated than Republican or Democrats, which is also true in some other counties in Western North Carolina and across the state. But that's one thing it has kind of going for it in the swing category. It also did, as you note, it was one of four counties that voted for President Trump and voted for Governor Roy Cooper. So far as what's going on, I mean, I think you've got an interesting mix of kind of different worlds here in Jackson County. It's, of course, historically Democratic, but that has changed a lot in recent years. You have, of course, a growing university, which is driving some of the vote choice. But then you've also got cashers and a lot of second homeowners, many of whom are registered in North Carolina, that are registered in this county, in Jackson County. So I think Jackson County is one of really four counties that I would watch across the entire state as I try to figure out really what's going to happen in North Carolina in 2020.
Not surprisingly, it is home to one of the few swing districts in the state house races as well, District 119. We'll get to that in a future interview. But one thing that is going on in the 11th Congressional District, which includes Jackson County and the rest of the 18 westernmost counties, is the vote the city of Asheville took last week that sets up the process to create reparations for the African American community in the city. Both the candidates running for the congressional seat in the 11th have made statements about reparations. Madison Cawthorn wrote one out in Madison Cawthorn wrote a piece for the website The Daily Wire. Mo Davis, the Democratic nominee, has been talking about this too. Getting away from what the reparations will be, looking at this as a campaign issue, is either candidate's statements or either candidate's feelings about reparations, is that really going to sway any voters in this race?
You know, I don't think it's going to sway too many, but I think it could drive turnout in one direction or the other. I think it's also going to reinforce a little bit of the division that is in the 11th and is going to be accelerated, which is kind of Asheville versus the rest of the district. So about 18% of the registered voters in the 11th Congressional District have Asheville addresses at any rate. About 35% are from Buncombe County. So Asheville is incredibly important for the 11th. Buncombe County is, of course, incredibly important, but it is not the majority of the district. And so I think what we're going to see is perhaps reparations and the argument over reparations, the debate over reparations, working differently in Buncombe County and in Asheville versus the rest of the district, where it's likely to be a little bit less popular.
Okay. Anything else on the political stuff you want to add?
So I think on reparations in general, I think it's important to note nationwide that although this conversation is picking up steam and it's getting a lot more attention, it is still only about 31% of Americans support reparations. That is an increase from a couple of years ago, but it's not a massive increase. So from about 26% of Americans in 2018 to about 31% now, so an increase of about 5 percentage points. What's really interesting to me is that the largest increase has come amongst African Americans. So a couple of years ago, about 58% of African Americans supported reparations. Now that's about 82%. So most of this increase that we're seeing in support for reparations has come from within the African American community.